Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, and we're going to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Friday, December 27th, 2019. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, Melody.
Well, I can't say Happy New Year yet, but it's coming. And I know I certainly enjoyed my few days off from Discount Gold and Silver. And, you know, we've been busy today. Everybody is catching up, making those orders, and trying to get the – and, folks, if you need those IRA precious metals, we have them here. So, you know, it's that time of the year. And I'm always a firm believer of taking physical delivery first. But if you have those for 401s that you can convert some of those funds into an IRA, give us a call. We'll help you do it, and we have the companies to do it, and you can have your gold and silver sit there in your precious metal IRA. You can take physical delivery of it when you can. You can take it by little bits and pieces, or, you know, when you get a certain age, of course, you can take more of it. But always give us a call. Gold today. You know, it was nice. It was up strong this morning. We had a high of 1515, and it weakened a little bit. It was down 80 cents right now at 1511. Silver, we had an 1804 again, trying to beat that $18, trying to stay above there, but 1783, down 15 cents. Platinum doesn't seem to have much change today. We did have a high of 955. We're holding at 947. Palladium was up $6, 1,913. Now, we saw a big hit in the dollar today. It was down 0.58. It was more than that just a little bit ago when I was getting ready to do the program, bringing up my numbers. It was in 96, and now we're holding at 97, down 0.58. Crude oil is down 3 cents at 61.65. Paper markets today, oh, I'm sure they're all high. Didn't look at them once. I saw the early morning trade on Bloomberg, and I'm sure they're getting what they want for the end of the year. The Dow was up 19 points, 28,640. The NASDAQ was down 15 at 9,006. S&P was pretty much the same as yesterday, 3,240. 10-year yield, that dropped 0.03. 1.87. Hey, the euro, it moved.
Yay.
It's 1.12. Yay, it was up 0.68. Got out of that 111 that's been sitting there. Now, that's what you call a stable currency.
There, I'll tell you what, there are going to be some people suffering from OCD that are going to have a really bad day, Melody.
Why? Oh, yes. I know, it's so nice to see a move there, but European Asian markets, Hong Kong was up big, 365 points, 1.30%. The Hang Seng had the had its best day in 5 months, so that's what they did. Let me see what the extreme greed, 91, still holding up there, and of course, this is what we always experience at the end of the year. You always have that Santa Claus rally and so forth, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the program. And we've had, you know, we've talked about this, about the Fed injecting cash into the finance in the system in the overnight operations, and the New York Fed's operation to inject cash in the financing system over the end of the year was undersubscribed yesterday. Now, that's a possible indication that dealer balance sheets are nearing capacity. So, primary dealers submitted $18 billion in bids for the Fed's 14-day term repo operation, and that would mature January 9th. And that was less than the $35 billion on offer in the third-term operation aimed at the year-end funding that has come in under the maximum amount. So, the Fed so far has injected roughly $203 billion and could offer as much as $260 billion more next week for the turn. So, You know, they need to provide sufficient liquidity for year end, and it's not simply a matter of the Fed offering enough repo, but also relies upon the primary dealers transmitting it to the broader market. So, Dave.
Yeah, with banks.
Tell us all about it.
Yeah, with banks potentially bumping up against balance sheet limits, that intermediation may become more difficult, and the undersubscription of the most recent term operation doesn't surprise certain analysts. Thomas Simmons of Jefferies, for example, he's an economist there. He expects the next term operation on December 30th, that's Monday, will also be underutilized, but believes that morning's shorter-dated one-day operation, which matures January 2nd, will probably be taken up in full. Now, the Fed has been injecting liquidity into the repo market since the middle of September, the 17th to be exact. That's when the overnight rate for general collateral repurchase agreements spiked to 10% from around 2. It's also been buying treasury bills to add reserves to the system. The Fed also conducted an overnight operation Thursday with a limit of $120 billion. As with the most recent of these actions, it was undersubscribed, attracting just $28.8 billion of bids. That's just 24% of the offering.
So is this just the end of a year deal?
Well, we'll see. I mean, it. You mean just that it's undersubscribed?
Right.
Well, yeah. I mean, it could be. I guess we'll find out in the coming weeks, because the Fed's going to be continuing this into the new year.
Tell us about, you know, everyone is beginning to, I mean, everybody's waiting for the stock bubble to explode.
Boy, you know, one can't help but think the everything rally that's taking Wall Street by a storm right now is a classic asset bubble just waiting to explode. Advisor Share CEO Norman Hammond said this week, "I think so," referring to whether we are witnessing a bubble form across multiple asset classes. He added it will continue on for a while, for as long as we see we have an indication that we could have lower rates ahead, possibly, though, with a pause, but with an increasing Fed balance sheet. By everything rally, we mean assets of all kinds that are in major rally mode, almost in unison. It's as if investors, which are being hyped up on a steady dose of Fed rate cuts this year, and the so-called phase one trade deal between the U.S. and China, are beginning to completely misprice asset risk amid fear of missing out on rising markets.
And, you know, that usually ends up badly for anyone who's invested in paper. You can, but take gold, for instance. Gold prices largely traded with its technical range from early September to early December. You had investors took profits in bullion in favor of more liquid stocks. Yeah, maybe. But in spite of the major equities markets melting up at the year end, even gold prices have caught, you know, they've been doing great for this month. We've seen gold prices shoot up 7-week highs. Some of that momentum did spread to the ETF market. I think the ETF has notched about 5% gains in the past two sessions. Silver prices are up about 6% in the last month. We've seen copper, that strengthened to the tune of 7% this month. With a drop in the extreme bullish sentiment, Dave, and now a breakout above resistance, we think that maybe in the early days of 2020, and I don't think it's it's absolutely poised to challenge their highs from September. And, I think gold had a great year, and I think we're going to continue to have a great year for gold and silver.
Well, what seems to be an inflating bubble, of course, is evident in equities. Shares of chipmaker Advanced Micro Devices, for example, have skyrocketed 20% in the last month alone. Apple's stock is up about 10% in December, bringing its year-to-date gain to 83%, and Tesla's stock's hovering around a record after tacking on 32% in December. Now, at a $77 billion market cap, Tesla's now worth almost two times that of Ford, even though Tesla's profit outlooks remains highly questionable. The Fed's actions this year have been driving up prices everywhere, and if the Fed signals a change in interest rate policy in 2020, the bubble will almost certainly explode. Now, some analysts are saying it could be a huge bubble, and you know, we could see a huge decline, 50 and 60% declines that happen quickly before you even have a chance to react to them. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you're holding paper, plan accordingly.
And you know, the other bubble that everyone has been waiting for it to explode has been the bond market. That's another one. But and I think when one of these bubbles goes, the other one is going to go. I don't think they're going to be able to hold it together this time. I don't think the Fed can print enough money quick enough to get it to keep these markets. And that's the key. You know, Dave, we talk about all the time about the Fed, the government's going to print as much money as they can to keep this going. They're going to print till the cows come home, and they print and print and print. But it gets to a point in time where they can't print fast enough. I don't think they can change the digits quick enough in order to keep the system from collapsing when we get to that point. And it will happen rapidly. And you won't have a chance, because as you're trying to call to sell your paper, so is a million other people trying to do the same thing. And guess what? They don't answer their phones. Brokers don't answer. Well, I'll do it by the internet. It won't work. It won't work. And so what? You sell it online in the computer? Do you think you're going to get your money back? How fast do you think they're going to send you a check if the system is unraveling and it's happening that quick? And that's if the systems don't go down on the computers. Then you're going to have to prove that you had it and that you actually sold it. So a lot of things could happen. There's a lot of high risk involved in the paper markets right now. And anybody with a half a brain is expecting it to correct. We would like it to continue, but the stock market is not the economy. And that's what everybody has miscued and believes, that, hey, we have a great economy. Look at the stock market. The two aren't the same. Two different things. But and everyone has forgotten what 2008 was like. You know, those who had to stand in line to go to, you know, getting your money out of your bank. I think one was SunTrust. Remember standing in line, worrying? And then you could only get so much out. They were able to stop it and control it then, but Dave, I don't think they can do it now. So, and I do believe we're at that point. We just don't know when it's going to happen. So, yeah, it's an election year. But I'm almost, you know, it is surprising to see these markets continue to go as they are. I mean, just on the talk of a trade deal, nobody even knows what's in it. Just a bunch of promises or just a lot of statements from politicians from China and the U.S. It amazes me. It amazes me. But anyway, so 800-375-4188. What's going on with Russia and Iran?
Well, Russia, who's seeing prospects for multi-billion dollar deals flashing like sugar plums dancing in their heads, ruled out extending a UN-approved arms embargo on Iran that expires in October next year. And that's despite U.S. warning that lifting the restrictions will jeopardize global security. Deputy Foreign Minister Sergei Ryabkov said today, "We're not ready to do the bidding of our American colleagues." Secretary of State Mike Pompeo earlier this year warned that allowing renewed weapon sales to Iran would mean the country will be unleashed to create new global turmoil. The removal of the UN arms embargo within 5 years was part of the 2015 nuclear deal with Iran, which the U.S. withdrew from last year. The Trump administration has pursued a policy of maximum pressure since then, that pressure on Iran in a bid to force them back to the negotiating table.
Well, you know, they've had the Russia, China, even the European powers, they've tried unsuccessfully to salvage, trying to curb Iran's nuclear activities. Ending the ban on the military sales is important for Russia as it will bring it closer to Iran and also opens up the world's last untapped weapons market. So, you know, it's interesting. Wasn't the three of them doing some sort of military exercises that we talked about yesterday's program? So it's the arm embargo bars Iran from buying offensive weapons. Russia has sold its S-300 anti-aircraft system to Iran after ending a self-imposed moratorium that it put in place at Israel's request. That's interesting.
Yeah, well, Iran also wants to purchase weapons it's largely been unable to acquire for decades when the embargo expires in 10 months. That's an assessment released by the U.S. Defense Intelligence Agency. Iran's already targeting military supplies, primarily from Russia, but also from China. Iran's potential acquisitions include Russian super Su-30 fighters, Yak-130 trainers, and T-90 tanks. Iran has also shown interest in buying the S-400 air defense system that Turkey's reportedly buying and Bastion coastal defense system from Russia. Things are not necessarily looking up on the geopolitical scene, Melody.
No, it really isn't. And it's interesting to see how these countries are teaming up and working with one another. Speaking of working together, you have the European Union and Britain. They're struggling to seal that deal, Brexit. They're trying to do an agreement on trade. I guess that has to be done by January 31st of 2020. That's when the UK is scheduled to leave the European Union. And negotiations between the remaining members and the British government on future trade, fisheries, a bunch of other things, education, transport relations, and all that can begin after that date and must conclude by the end of 2020. You know, it really is kind of funny. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen said, "I'm very concerned about how little time we have." My gosh, how long have they been working? It's like, oh, this just didn't happen. "It seems to me that we should seriously consider whether negotiations are feasible in such a short time." Mm-hmm. What, weren't they working on this or knew that this was coming about in how many years? One thing we do know, that our break was coming about. We'll be heading into it right now. Please stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival.
We will find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to rule the world.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hey, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. We're just going to finish up little bit of information about the Brexit we were talking about, and you know, about how they seem to be, you know, concerned now that they don't have enough time to work on the trade and to come up with some negotiations and so forth. And you know, David told me during the break that it was the European Union just didn't think that the Brexit would go through. So kind of interesting how things changed when you get Boris Johnson in there, and May just couldn't get it done. She just couldn't get it done. And so we'll see how that works out. And I don't think this is any big surprise. Millennials have the lowest credit scores. The average FICO score for both the millennial and the younger Gen X generation is below 669. That level defines subprime borrowers. A lot of reasons why their scores can be low. Well, young, you have to build your credit. They haven't established a robust credit history at all. You have the young millennials might just barely be out of college. And at 22, most people have very little credit history, so would likely have lower credit scores. And while one can argue that it takes time to build up credit scores, the fact that Gen Zers have effectively the same FICO score as millennials. Now, they say that this is troubling and suggest that there is more to the problem than merely the follies of youth. Experian found that the millennials, people between age 23 and 38, have had a tough time getting ahead financially, Dave.
Yeah, they're held back by their low credit scores, and you know, some millennials have struggled to obtain new credit. As a result, they're finding it harder to reach certain financial goals. Here's some facts. Compared with the national average of 701, millennials had an average FICO score of 665. The silent generation, on the other hand, those in their 70s and older, had the highest FICO score, 756, followed by baby boomers with an average of 732. Gen Z, the youngest group with age between 18 and 22, had the same score as millennials. Millennials have an average credit card balance of over $5,200. That's up 7% from $4,869 in 2017. They also carried an average of almost $35,000 in student loan debt, which is up 8% over 2017. And their total debt is over $80,000, up 11% from 2017.
Well, you know, I guess to some degree, if they have low scores, they can't get credit, but it's going to cost them more. And if it costs them more, maybe they won't get it. So that would be helpful for them. And maybe they'll take the money that they make and put it into a savings account instead of a credit card account. So, but our blog is out today. And, you know, you wrote about the precious metals Santa rally. I'm always ready to hear about precious metals. So why don't you tell us a little more about that Santa rally?
The Santa rally, Melody, it's when prices rise during the five trading days after Christmas and the first 2 days of the new year, is off and running. in both the paper and precious metals market, although there was a small correction today, really just the second day of the Santa Rally period. Gold and silver prices climbed to their highest since November yesterday as lingering uncertainty around that China trade deal and the rising deficit from the newly inked federal budget deal boosted demand for the safe haven metals. Excuse me, yesterday spot gold rose 0.75% by the end of the trading day, and silver jumped almost the same level to just shy of 18. U.S. February gold futures were up 0.74% to 15.16 an ounce. Now, the rally is sure to continue, but investors were doing some profit-taking today, as Melody mentioned, that gold and silver were down slightly, 40 and 15 cents, respectively.
In your blog, you quote a Bernard Sin of MKS, and he said that the U.S.-China trade tensions are very intense. There's been recent news that suggests a deal will go through, but until and unless something is on paper, uncertainty will persist, and of course, that's all beneficial for gold.
Indeed. I mean, we know that rising uncertainty in general, but rising uncertainty, particularly around an issue that affects the global markets, like this U.S.-China trade back and forth over the last almost 2 years, has been good overall for gold. And it's that uncertainty, that prolonged war that's weighing on the financial markets. It's helping gold to have risen over 17% so far this year. That's on track for its best year since 2010, I believe. Silver's up over 16% this year. Now, that's again as of midnight last night. By today's opening, gold had already gained almost 2% this week in lightened trading during the holiday period. Now, Alberto de Casa of Active Trade said the driver appears to be mostly technical, following the breakup of the trading range between 1450 and 1475, where gold seemed to be trapped for a couple of weeks. He added, the first target is placed at 1512, while the next key levels are at 15, which we've passed, and the next key levels are at 1530 and then 1550 to 1555. Growth concerns over the U.S. economy lingered, as data earlier in the week showed that new orders for key U.S. durable goods were flat in November and that shipments fell. Together, that suggests that business investment is remaining a drag on the economy during the fourth quarter.
So we can call it the Santa Rally. It is off and running. And there was one Wall Streeter that offered one market surprise for the new year.
Well, he says, watch gold in 2020. It's vice chair of Blackstone, Byron Wien. He said on Christmas Eve, he said, gold has the chance to be an interesting investment. Has a chance? Come on, Byron. Wien, whose career spans a half century, releases an annual list of 10 market surprises that, remains a must read in the financial industry. He said he didn't include the bonus gold prediction in his 2020 list because he included something similar in 2019. And he says he doesn't do it 2 years in a row. Well, his comments came as gold rose to its highest levels in about 6 weeks. Wien says he thinks interest rates will remain at their current levels next year, and we know that lower interest rates decrease the opportunity cost for holding non-yield bullion. That's good news.
And tell us something about silver prices for 2020.
Well, they're likely to soar too, according to some. The latest edition of the Lombardi Letter, for example, says by the end of 2020, it wouldn't be shocking to see silver trading at close to $26 an ounce. That would represent an increase of more than $8 or 45% over yesterday's close. So things are looking up in general, ladies and gentlemen.
And, you know, when you hear the Wall Streeters, people who trade in paper, begin to start paying attention to gold. I mean, they're the ones, whether you like it or not, I mean, they're part of the problem of manipulating the prices, but they'll also help run the price too. So the fundamentals for gold and silver, to me, are the only true fundamentals out there. And pretty much, I mean, sure, you know, maybe water. You know, there's some areas that you would think would be you could do no wrong. But as far as protecting your purchasing power and converting those paper dollars into real money, gold is the only bet out there. It's real money, ladies and gentlemen. And so, but to hear the Wall Streeters talk about it, you know it's going to happen. And to me, not only is it going to happen, it's sooner than you think. That's the key. It's going to happen sooner than what you think. You always hear us say it's going to happen. We just don't know when. So when you hear the Wall Streeters talk about it, I think when is closer than. And finally, so don't wait. Today's a great price for gold and silver. We do have a few 2019 Silver Eagles left over. The 2020 Silver Eagles will be coming out the third week of January. We do have some 2019s that we're running specials on. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. The Pentagon says DNA tests could expose personal data. The 23andMe and Ancestry DNA tests that so many Americans got for Christmas could expose their personal data to bad guys. I never liked that. Defense officials are warning that the do-it-yourself genetic tests are a danger to people who use them, as there's a risk that third parties could exploit participants' private data, Dave. And the Pentagon made the declaration as it warned service members to stay away from DNA tests if they got one for Christmas. Such tests are largely unregulated and could expose personal and genetic information and potentially create unintended security consequences and increase risk to the joint force and mission. The popular tests generally use saliva to determine the user's ethnic heritage. Some tests have also led people to find family members they didn't know.
Well, but now the explosion of the at-home DNA kit industry has also led to concerns like those you've just talked about, further concerns in this scientific community about the data being exploited or ending up in the wrong hands. I'd still like to hear some more specifics about what these unintended security consequences and the increased risk to the armed services mission would be. As we know, Ancestry and 23andMe are the largest players, and the two companies have tested a total 25 million people since their founding. According to researchers, those DNA samples have created a database big enough to identify nearly all 300 plus million Americans through cousins. Ancestry spokesperson Gina Spadafore defended the product in an email yesterday, saying, "Ancestry does not share DNA data with insurers, employers, or third-party marketers." But I have a feeling, Melody, that Ms. Spadafore misses the point.
Yeah, I wouldn't buy that for, I have a bridge in Florida to sell, too. When it comes to bucks, I mean, I can't imagine what they would do with the, anytime there's a data list, particularly when it deals with your DNA. And yeah, it would be interesting to know a little bit more about how it would affect the military and so forth, the security consequences. But anytime you have that type of DNA, I mean, it's interesting to know where your family came from and all that. I get it. But I would never knowingly give up my DNA. And I also believe if you get a blood test, they probably, if you need medical purposes and so forth, they probably already know your DNA then. I don't know. But, you have the law enforcement, they're desperate to get hands on giant DNA databases. They think it's going to help solve crimes. Dave, I've heard where you can actually change the DNA tests. I don't know if it's true, It'd be something to look into, maybe ask Wendy about. But you could add someone else's DNA into yours and actually change it to create a result. I mean, I don't know what can be done. Maybe I watch too much TV. I don't know, but I don't think I do. But I don't know. It's just a scary thing to think that government has your DNA. But there was one attorney said that she did a DNA test last year and said while she felt the results were worth it, she didn't think of the consequences. She says, I am concerned that someone will hack 23andMe and use my DNA, said the woman of 61 who only gave her name. She says, I'm sorry I did it. No, because the results concerned, I have family in Eastern Europe and Russia. She thought it was interesting. That's what I said. It is interesting. But the damage is done. She didn't think of the consequences. You know, I would think of something else, Dave, that maybe we need to learn a little bit more about our histories. And maybe, you know, we need to start keeping track of our families and passing down the information and so forth. Maybe we should start doing a better job of, you know, knowing where we came from and so forth. But anyway, so that is interesting, Dave. And did you ever hear Wawa?
Wawa. My wife's in my favorite Minute Market chain.
Well, you know, they're facing a whole wave of lawsuits over a data breach. And it's affected 850 locations across the East Coast. They discovered malware on its payment processing service this month before stopping the breach on December 12th. I think they knew it for a month before they even made the announcements or something, Dave. That Wawa is based in Pennsylvania, and they believe that the malware had been collecting card numbers, customer names, and other data since as early as March. The data breach was the inevitable result of Wawa's inadequate data security measures and a cavalier approach to the data security. And this is what one of the lawsuits had said. Amazing.
Yeah, it looks like the breach affected all stores, which stretch along the East Coast from Pennsylvania to Florida. In-store payments and payments at fuel dispensers were affected, but cash machines inside the store, ATM machines, were not. Wawa said it will offer free credit card monitoring and identity theft prevention services to anyone whose information might have been collected.
It's a lot of folks, ladies and gentlemen. Make sure your data is secure. Make sure you protect what you have. Be careful. 800-375-4188 for discount gold and silver trading. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey water filtration systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. And let's see. Does money have to be a source of conflict, Dave?
Perhaps not, but it sure seems to be.
I don't think this is news. It's news, but it's not new news. Or news. 60% of couples cite financial problems as playing somewhat of a role in the divorce. This was from a 2017 study from Experian. But it doesn't have to be. Successful couples have shared financial objectives, a mutual vision for the future, and agreed upon plan on how to achieve their financial priorities. A couple of ways, a few money habits and choices successful couples make to ensure a healthy, stable partnership. First, to have a healthy relationship with your partner and to share finances. Respect your partner's contribution. I think that's very important. Because lots of times, that certainly is an unequal. And so I think, and it's whether, Dave, whether the one makes more has to be respectful of the one that makes less, and also the one that makes less has to be respectful of the one who makes more. So it's very important. Successful couples value both partners, regardless of whether each person works outside the home, maybe a stay-at-home parent. We know that taking care of children is a full-time job. And I think that's probably one of the most important jobs that a couple has.
Yeah, equality is just a crucial part of it. Next, a healthy relationship starts with budgeting and communication. Budgeting helps you understand how you're spending your money and help you prioritize spending, as well as saving and investing together as a couple. So financial planners recommend making time on a regular basis and planning for the meeting as a routine task, so you're not rushed or ambushed or going into your talking emotional. And compromise, obviously, is the key. If one partner is a saver and the other is a spender, you should plan accordingly.
That's finally, always the case.
Yeah, about it. Finally, it's important to have some of your own money, too. Partners should have some discretion and enjoyment with, call it what you want, discretionary money, play money, money that's yours to do with, essentially, as you wish, whether it's spend it on something for yourself, for your spouse, for your mother, buying gold or silver coins, or just keeping in a safe at home as a stash. It's, again, important that you agree, you and your partner agree on some level of each, however you do it, or however often you allocate it. So, sum it up, while money can be a source of stress, ladies and gentlemen, just like a long-term relationship, it takes communication, compromise, and obviously commitment to attain success. We'll call them the three C's.
The three C's. Well, let's talk about, there's all kinds of things going up. We have the biggest headlines and everybody's talking about, but I really like what we talk about, Dave. And, we talk about things you don't hear anywhere else. You don't hear it on mainstream media. It doesn't matter where you go. And, they're all focused, of course, now on stocks or you know, all focused on, you know, the wealthy, all focused on you know, the just weird things that happen at the end of the year. And maybe we can do that on Monday, you know, focus on some of the maybe the bizarre or things that have happened or and predictions for 2020. We know government is going to set records for debt. They didn't sign. I thought, how did they sign the budget deal?
You know, I don't. The House and Senate passed it, but I didn't see. I heard that Trump was poised to sign it. I don't know if he did over the week. I didn't see anything about that.
I didn't see anything reported on that. So,
but the government's open, so presumably he did sign.
True. What about the training that's ramping up for the state election officials, Dave?
Well, we're reading that inside a hotel ballroom near the nation's capital, a U.S. Army officer with battlefield experience told 120 state and local election officials recently that they may have more in common with military strategists than they may think. These government officials are on the front lines of a different kind of battlefield, one where they're helping to defend American democracy by ensuring free and fair elections. The officer said to the group, "Everyone in this room is part of a bigger effort, and it's only together we are going to get through this." Now, that officer and other past and present national security leaders had a message to convey to officials from 24 states gathered for recent training held by a Harvard-affiliated democracy project. That officer said that they, the state and local election officials, are linchpins in efforts to defend U.S. elections from an attack by Russia, China, or other foreign interests, foreign threats. And developing a military mindset, they say, will help them protect the integrity of the vote of their citizens.
And what about the threat within the borders? You know, there's a lot of things that need to be changed, and you know, hopefully they train them. And you know, I don't know. They don't change what needs to be changed in order to prevent our elections from being tampered with. So until they fix the things that truly need to be fixed, you know, I think you'll continue to see it. I mean, you've been having this for years and years. Well, for a long time, anyway. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu declared victory early today in his primary election battle for leadership. The TV stations predicted a landslide win for the longtime Israeli leader. The apparent victory means that Netanyahu will lead the party into March elections, the country's third election in less than a year. He is also likely to seize on the victory as he battles criminal corruption charges. To the members, is it Likud or Likud?
Likud.
For the trust, support, and love, Netanyahu said, "God willing, I will lead Likud to a big victory in the coming elections." I mean, he was just about out. I mean, how quickly things change over there in Israel. Partial results show Netanyahu capturing between 70 and 80% of the vote. It doesn't make any sense, does it? To me, it doesn't.
Well, you know, I guess this is where I would say it is what it is. some things are hard to explain. A lot of people were saying his former Likud party member Gideon Saar was going to have a much better showing because of Netanyahu's inability, like his former opponent Benny Gantz did in forming a new coalition government. But despite the recent indictment, Netanyahu remains popular among Likud members. And the fiercely loyal party, which has only had four leaders since its inception in the 1970s. Saar, who had garnered support from a handful of Likud, they call them backbenchers, had surged in the lead up to the vote, and he could have benefited from cold, rainy weather that appeared to hold turnout down. But 70 to 80% of the vote, Melody, in my mind, people were not concerned. They were committed to to the known, I guess. And Netanyahu has been known for a long time in Israel. Netanyahu portrays Saar as inexperienced while depicting himself as a master of international diplomacy and a scourge to Israel's enemies. Interestingly, he was rushed off stage just the other day after a rocket fired from Gaza set off an air raid siren at a campaign rally in the southern city of Ashkelon. Israel responded with a wave of airstrikes early the following day. So, interesting stuff.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure he's going to get reelected. But hey, elections, if you have corrupt governments, I mean, I'd have to think that the elections are a little corrupt too. But that's just me thinking that. Earlier in the program, we talked about Iran, we talked about China, we talked about Russia, the weapons that's being sold to Iran. And now Russia is saying that they made the announcement that they were working on a hypersonic missile, but now it's operational, Dave?
That's what we're reading today, Melody. A new intercontinental weapon that can fly 27 times the speed of sound became operational today, at least according to Russia's defense minister. Putin has described what's called the Avant-Garde hypersonic glide vehicle as a technological breakthrough comparable to the 1957 Soviet launch of the first satellite. The new Russian weapon and a similar system being developed by China have obviously troubled the U.S., which has pondered defense strategies in response. The Avant-Garde has launched atop an ICBM, but unlike a regular missile warhead that follows a predictable path after it separates from the rocket, the Avant-Garde can make sharp maneuvers in the atmosphere en route to its target, making it a lot harder to intercept, and therein lies what the U.S. will call the destabilizing factor of this new weapon.
Yeah, Putin unveiled that Avant-Garde back in March of 2018, and that was one of the things that he noted, that the ability to make sharp maneuvers on its way to the target and how it will render missile defense useless. He said at the time that it heads to target like a meteorite, like a fireball. So it's 27 times faster than the speed of sound. That's incredible.
Well, that's fast, and it's scary, particularly when you think of the flight path of these missiles from Russia. They're not going east and east to west. They're going over the North Pole to their targets in the U.S. So it's a lot quicker. I gotta believe that our military is there's got to be some secret code name plan underway, and probably since March, since Putin unveiled the weapon in March, to get one done here. Although in August, our Defense Secretary Mark Esper said that he believes it's probably a couple of years away before the U.S. has a similar kind of weapon. Scary news, perhaps the scariest that we've read today, Melody.
Well, you know, you said they go to the North Pole.
They fly over the North Pole.
They fly over the North Pole. You know, it's interesting.
They would. Thankfully, they haven't.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I it was just a short little blurb I was watching, and I think it was even on the Weather Channel, maybe. They were talking about the North Pole, where they were talking about where there's actually three North Pole designations. And you know, the only one that I can remember is the magnetic pole. And, you know, there's so many strange things that are going on. You wonder, depending on how often they fly those hypersonic things, if it can't, you know, I don't know.
They'd be thrown off course, you mean?
Well, something.
Because of the magnetic fields?
Well, you know, something. Or you're interrupting those magnetic fields, or I don't know. It's, you know, there's, you know, you know, we do a lot of, we used to, I don't know if we still do, but they used to do a lot of nuclear testing in our oceans and everything. And, you know, everybody talks about the heating up of oceans and so forth. And, you know, there's a lot of things other than just cows and cars that it's, I don't know, I'm just... just talking and thinking out loud. I'm thinking about the impacts that it could have with those testing. And I know they're doing a lot of other testing. Russians are up there and other places. So I can't believe we're out of time. Maybe it's the perfect... maybe it was... the timing is perfect, Dave. Get me out of that one. Thank
Saved
you, Dave.
Saved by the bell.
Saved by the bell. Thank you, Dave, for joining me. And ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back on Monday. So until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.